right, this is the Green Zone. Damian Locker, it's a nihilist show this week. I am flying solo. And again, our Green Zone NFL preview continues. Up next, it is the Miami Dolphins and Travis Wingfield, host of the Drive Time podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins podcast network, joining us. Thank you for your time today, Travis.
Yeah, happy to be on. And I'm jealous of that weather update with those temperatures you guys have up there. It is hot and muggy down here, my friend, so I could use a break up north.
Well, you do tend to get a break, but we can get hot up here. Saskatchewan is no stranger to the heat, but yes, it is a bit of a break, and we had a hot long weekend, so this is actually kind of nice today. Let's jump into camp highlights. Anything from the past week here or 2 weeks that stand out for you? Any moments, Travis?
Yeah, I think Tua Tagovailoa's only interception so far through 11 days. We just had our 11th practice earlier this morning, and he threw his first pick in practice to Minkah Fitzpatrick, the Dolphin of old, coming back for his first year and his second stint here with the Miami Dolphins for a 100-yard pick six. And on that play, Tyreek Hill, like the DK Metcalf play against the Cardinals a couple of years ago where he ran down the potential pick six and saved the touchdown, Tyreek Hill did something similar to that, and, you know, this team has been getting after it. It's been physical practices. They've been adjusting to a team that's more built to the trenches this year. To see Tyreek Hill, after all this offseason talk about his, you know, attention to detail and wanting to be there, to go out and practice and to sprint after a pick six the other way and save it, I thought said a lot about this team. So Minkah making big plays, Tyreek Hill back in, locked in and engaged with the team is a good sign for them going forward.
Let's deal with Tyreek right out of the gates here then. So, I mean, obviously, this is a player we know about because of, you know, off-field drama quite often. You know, that's the first thing that comes up. It's been a little bit quieter as of late. That must be a relief to the fan base in Miami.
I think so. And, you know, he did his job to troll the local media down here the other day, talking about Devon Achane as a third down back and taking him out of the game so they can convert more in short yardage and just was kind of being his trolly self. And I have to tell my friends in other content circles around the league, like, just whatever he says, don't take it seriously, because that's what he does. He likes to fire people up and rile them up. But as far as what we've seen so far, it's the returns have been good. He's been locked in. He's been in the building every single day going back to the offseason. But I do always, you know, caution fans, like, it's great right now. It's a good sign, a good first step. But let's see what happens when they lose a game and he gets three targets and, you know, one catch for 19 yards. That's kind of the real test of whether or not Tyreek is back in terms of being a good teammate versus just about a guy that wants to get 2,000 yards.
Now, speaking of concerns, you can't have a conversation with with somebody that covers the Miami Dolphins without jumping into the Tua waters. Are there concerns, I mean, maybe not from the team, but from the fan base about his health in this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think that's really the only concern left. And I know there's, you know, social media is interesting study in what is actually reality and what's not, but I know there's some social media people out there that don't love Tua very much. But as far as his production goes when he's out there, I think it speaks for itself, and you can kind of see that when he's not in the game. And obviously all teams, you know, regress a little bit when they're starting quarterbacks not in there, but the Dolphins offense goes from this, you know, 28 point per game operation to not functional without him. So I think that what he does for the offense, it speaks for itself. But, you nailed it. 6.5 games last year, he's out. He goes out for a couple of games, misses one with a concussion and has to miss 4 games because of that, and the 2 games off the hip injury following that as well. Without him in there, they went 8-9 with him missing 6 games. And he plays all 17 games, which he's only played one time in his career. It's a fair question if he can do it. They're a winning football team, but I think this year his focus, and it seems to me, Locker, like he really finally understands the value of himself versus trying to find the sticks on that third down scramble, which, you know, it's a competitive sport. He's a competitor, and he just has to measure the value of when he can put himself in harm's way or in spots that he shouldn't have done it early in games. One wasn't a blowout. He got hurt. So I think that him having a better understanding of when he can get away with that versus when he can just, like, check up and take an L is going to be a good sign for him going forward.
Travis Wingfield joining us, host of the Drive Time podcast. He covers the Miami Dolphins on the podcast network for Miami. Travis, speaking of that protection, the O-line has been a bit of concern for the Miami Dolphins. Have they done anything in camp that you've noticed to remedy that situation? And also, there's conversation about the revolving door on the secondary as well in Miami.
Yeah, I think the cornerbacks are very legitimate, and I'll come back to that. But if I had to kind of, you know, put my chest out there and stake reputation on something with this football team that it's not really, conventional wisdom at this point, it is the offensive line, because I think what they've seen through 2 weeks of Patrick Paul, who is the Teron Armstead replacement, he looks like a franchise left tackle. He is big, he's strong, he's quick, he's smart, articulate. They're picking up blitzes with him doing multiple things in the pass protection scheme. And then alongside him is rookie Jonas Avaiinaia, which previously the Dolphins didn't really invest in the guard position. It was kind of a thought that our scheme can kind of match that spot. But they went after him using two day two picks to go up and get him, and he looks the part as well. And then also signing James Daniels, the former Steeler guard, to play right guard for him, alongside Aaron Brewer, who was a 17-game starter at center last year and played very well. And then Austin Jackson coming back from his injury. When he was in the game last year, they averaged 150 yards rushing per game. Without him, it was down to 72 yards per game. So as long as those five guys are up and healthy, I think it's a strength of the team and one of the best lines in football. The depth will be tested as they go along, because you're not going to go a whole year with playing five offensive linemen. You have to have, you know, six, seven, eight guys. And then in the secondary, it's kind of a mixed match right now. I think they're still trying to work their way through some stuff. They brought in Jack Jones. They brought in Mike Hilton. I expect both those guys to play a lot this year. Last year's undrafted rookie Storm Duck has gotten a lot of buzz and some praise from McDaniel and Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So right now I think those three guys are kind of the front runners. But beyond that, it gets pretty thin pretty quick, and I would be surprised if we don't see another addition here at some point this month.
Are you seeing a lot of rookies in camp getting, you know, good reps?
Yeah, the first and second year players are kind of what this team hinges on. They've kind of pivoted towards a veteran-led team that was, you know, a bunch of imports from other clubs, and I think that kind of upset the apple cart a little bit in terms of, you know, guys wanting their contracts to get taken care of and taking care of the guys in-house and all that stuff. But now they're more young or youth-led, I should say. And I mentioned Patrick Paul. I mentioned Jonas Avaiinaia. On the other side of the ball, Chop Robinson, last year's first-round pick, he looks like a real true breakout defensive player this year. He had six sacks last year, high pass rush win rate, but he's been unblockable all camp long. And then this year's first-round pick, Kenneth Grant, is going to play a lot alongside the newly signed Zach Sealer with his big extension. And I think both those guys are expected to play a bunch of snaps up front. And this front seven has some absolute names to it that can get after the quarterback. And that's kind of the thinking about how they can protect that secondary, is putting immense pressure on the quarterback with great regularity.
So we're going through a checklist of concerns, obviously. We should probably touch on tight end. And what have they done with that position in camp that you've noticed, Travis?
Yeah, I think you're kind of looking to shift the offense with the Jonnu Smith trade. And I think what the Dolphins ultimately decided with moving Smith, you know, to get Minka Fitzpatrick back in that Ramsey trade. And by the way, Ramsey was never going to play though down here, just so we're clear on that. He was done. So to get something back that I thought was pretty valuable. But Jonnu Smith was, to me, he was a byproduct of the offense not working last year. And by that, I mean they were not able to get the ball down the field as much to Tyreek and Waddle. The running game by midseason was completely absent. When this offense is going, it's Tyreek Hill, it's Jalen Waddle, it's Devon Achane, it's both a runner and a receiver. And I think they want to get back to more of that. So I think they deemed Jonnu Smith expendable in that regard, especially at the contract figure that he wanted to have reworked. And so they've kind of got back to what it was previous to that, which was a bunch of big wide tight ends aligned next to the tackles and just play slobber knocker football. And that's what Farrell Brown, the new free agent, that's what his game is. That's what Julian Hill's game is. They do have a guy that, if you're a fantasy head out there, that might be like a dark horse late round stash option.
Okay.
His name is Tanner Connor. They love Tanner Connor. He's been there for 3 years now. He's had an issue staying healthy, which seems to be the Dolphins' in general problem. But he's been used all over the formation, kind of that F piece that Jonnu Smith was, the move tight end. And I could see him having a big role in the passing game should Darren Waller not be what Darren Waller used to be, and it remains a mystery that he is today.
How would you quantify, Travis, the pressure on head coach Mike McDaniel? He's leading into his fourth year. I mean, can you sum that up a bit?
I think it's more intense from the outside than it is from internally with the
okay.
Dolphins. I think Stephen Ross he went a long time without seeing, you know, these top ranked offenses and the explosive plays and the 4,000 yard passers and all that fun stuff. And Miami had the top-ranked scoring offense 2 years ago when their quarterback played every game, and Mike McDaniel was kind of the next big thing in NFL circles, and one bad year and all of a sudden it's like he can't do the job. And so I think that he has a lot of pressure from outside noise. Internally, I believe he's very well supported, but I do think they have to go back and find that offensive rhythm once again. And with the quarterback return, that should happen. But I think the biggest thing for McDaniel this year is going to be how can he deliver on his commentary about changing the culture and making guys more accountable. Last year was a really player-led operation. He has to kind of seize that back in and kind of take the reins of the whole operation and kind of be a tough guy, which I don't know if that's in his DNA, but he has to find a way to be a little bit more accountable to his guys.
All right. We're not far away from the upcoming season. Is there any dates on the schedule you have circled? Anything you're really looking forward to, Travis?
Yeah, to me, the season always starts when they play the Buffalo Bills. Excuse me. And the first two games against the Colts and Patriots, I imagine they'll be favorites to win those games. And if they can get to 2-0 and going up to Buffalo on a Thursday night, if they can find a way to steal that win, it would just set them up for a really special season, because they do play Buffalo back down here in Week 10 at home, which is a game that you kind of have to win if you're going to win the division, you know, Buffalo at home. But if they could steal one on a short week in a really tough environment, that would be huge for this team. I don't expect it because Josh Allen owns the Dolphins, but if they can find a way to win that game, it would kind of be the spark of their season they need.
I'm always fascinated with these international games, Travis. What do you think the players think? Because they're on their way to Spain again in November, the Dolphins.
I mean, it's a long haul, and it's not just the players, too. It's the entire admin staff that has to, you know, set the logistics up for all this stuff. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's great for the game that the players ultimately have to think about, you know, what this does to the salary cap, which is how they get paid and increases, you know, their ability to make more money. So the global market outreach is great for the brand, and if it's great for the brand, it's great for your pockets. But in terms of when it happens and, you know, making that long flight, losing a home game as well for the Dolphins this year, it's, you know, the yin and yang is kind of interesting to talk about, but I think, you know, the international games, especially when it's your home game, it's a little bittersweet to have to go over there.
Travis, are the Miami Dolphins a playoff team?
If Tua plays 17 games, without a question in my mind, but that is a huge question. So if he misses a couple of games, I would still say yes, but if he misses six again, there's no chance. So with Tua, yes. Without him, no.
Awesome, my friend. Thank you for your time today, Travis.
Anytime. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Travis Wingham, again, host of the Drive Time podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins podcast network, if you're interested in looking him up. Still looking for your grades. Another win for the Riders, now 7-1. I have my grades coming up in about 10, 15 minutes or so. Up next on the Green Zone, if you're involved in this activity, you are a horrible human being. Actually, you might be one of the worst people on the planet. That's next, 980 CGME and 650 CKO. Headstones. I think they're going to be part of Shake the Lake. If I'm not mistaken, they're going to be out there. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, if you've never seen the Headstones live, I would highly recommend. That is a band worth seeing in the live setting. This is the Green Zone. Jamie and Locker. I am Locker. Jamie, not with us. Dog fighting. Who gets up in the morning, goes, I got a good idea. I'm going to get my dogs to fight, and I'm going to have my buddies come over, and we're going to bet. What is wrong with you? Like, if you're involved in that, you're the worst human being on the planet. Like, at least the top 1% of the worst human beings. I can't even wrap my head around how this became a thing. A former NFL player from Oklahoma has been convicted for his role in a large-scale dogfighting operation. So they arrested LaShawn Eugene Johnson. He's 54 from Broken Arrow. He was convicted on 6 felony counts possessing dogs for an animal fighting venture. He was acquitted on some of the charges, but a bunch of them are going through. He faces 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000 on the count of each one of these 5 charges. So we'll find out what's going to happen to him, how long he's going to go to jail at a later date. But at least they were able to make some of these charges stick. Unbelievable. Like, again, sorry. What is wrong with you? And don't text me some sort of explanation as to why people, because I don't even want to see it. I read that this morning. I was going to chump them, but I'm like, that's not even good enough. It's not, like, no. Anyway, Up next on the Green Zone, my grades for the Riders' win in Montreal. This team is 7-1 right now, baby. 7-1. I'm also looking for your grades, your failing grades, your top grades. You can text them in. Also, phone lines open. The Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker. Jamie is off for the week. He takes the bye weeks off. Actually, I believe he is camping, if I am not mistaken. He might be camping. And one of the couple of conversations I'd like to have today on the Green Zone is actually about camping. I'm new to Saskatchewan. My wife and I love camping, and we were excited about the possibility of getting out and exploring this fine province this summer, and we have done just that. I'm trying to remember the camping spots that we've been to so far. I had to write them down. But Moose Mountain Park, that's out at Kennesee Lake. That was our first camping trip. That was in May. That was actually a colder day. I'd like to go back there because when we went there the first time, the weather wasn't fantastic and the lake was really cold at the time. So maybe a little bit later in the summer, we would enjoy that. But it was beautiful, but it was just one of those situations. We ended up coming home a little bit. I think it snowed that weekend, if I'm not mistaken. Buffalo Pound Provincial Park, which is really quick. That was a quick drive, but we liked that lake. Catapua, we went out there for a weekend. That's fantastic. Cypress Hills Interprovincial Park was where we were this past weekend. So I'm looking for your favorite Saskatchewan camping spots. We loved Cypress Hills. We will go back there. But what we thought we would do is we would hit a bunch of different spots over the next couple of years. We got a little trailer that we haul around. It's like basically, it's one of those teardrop things, the galley kitchen on the back. And we just, it's a bed on wheels, essentially, but it's got all our camping stuff in it. Pack up the dog and some food, and we hit the road. And, yeah, loving it. And I got to tell you this. This is something you might not know. We came from Alberta. We were in Alberta for 18 years. And it's not even comparable. Saskatchewan is a way better province to camp in. Hands down, 100%. We had friends from Alberta join us. If you missed me talking about it earlier, we had friends join us, and they're from Alberta. And he was like, "This is amazing. We're coming back. We are coming back to Saskatchewan." So, looking forward to we're going to get out. I think one more time on the long weekend, Labor Day long weekend, and again, I'm looking for any of your suggestions. Green Zone fan line 877-332-8255. If you got a spot, a Sasky camping spot you really, really like. I got this from James. He's listening in Edmonton. He goes to Madge Lake. Am I saying that right? Duck Mountain Provincial Park. I got the thumbs up from producer Scotty. He also wants to go, or he is also recommending Kimball Lake at Meadow Lake Provincial Park. I'm going to have to look those up, check those out. He's planning on catching the rodeo out there. Maybe that's coming up here sooner than later. Richard from Saskatoon, he spent his summers at Manitou Beach in his younger years. Nice campground, the mineral lake, the heated pool. You know what? My family actually on my mother's side is from there. So I'm familiar with Manitou Beach. We would come here when we were like, when I was really, really young, before like 5-6 years of age. So I have like very, like minimal memories of it. But we did go back a couple of years ago when we buried my grandmother. We're spreading her ashes around. So we did this trip all through like where she grew up in Alberta and Saskatchewan. And my only fear about Manitou is that if I went to the campground, I think I would spend most of my time at Mike's Beach Bar. Is that place still open? I love that little bar. I think I'd be convincing my wife to skip the hot dogs and hit the bar. So, yes, might want to avoid that one for the time being. But, yeah, any of your camping, any favorite Saskatchewan camping spots, hot spots, text them in. Again, 877-332-8255. We're also looking for your grades based on the game from this past weekend. Here's mine.
Jamie and Locker are about to take you to school.
Bueller.
They've got their red pens and filling the margin.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
Here are their top grades.
You mean I passed?
And their failing grades.
You get nothing. You lose.
It's time for the Green Zone Report Card.
All right, here we go. The grades. This is based on the win from this past weekend. We'll start with my failing grade. This goes to anyone at this point that is still not sold on this team. Listen, I can understand, and I think everybody was sort of in the same boat. Listen, very impressed with the 6-1 or the 5-1. Everyone was happy with where this team was, but there was a couple of nagging sort of things. And one of those nagging things was this inability for this team to dominate a game from the first snap till the end of the game. Well, that was not the case this weekend.
Montreal sends for Harris down the middle, end zone, touchdown. Second and 8 for Harris. Looks to the end zone, far corner, drops it in there for Keyshawn Johnson, touchdown, Riders.
So then there you go. My failing grade goes to anyone that still is finding reasons not to believe in this Riders squad. By the way, if you have any grades that you would like to pass on, please send them to us now, 877-332-8255. That is the Green Zone fan line. Can I add one more sort of an amendment, not really a failing grade? I'd like to fail the replay center, still annoyed by the name, but that's not the failing grade, for taking away the touchdown from Caleb Sanders. There should be a rule. You should never be allowed to go to the command center or replay center or whatever we're calling it now to take away a touchdown from a big guy. When a big guy rumbles in and gets a 6 on the board, it should stay. All right, my top grades. My top grade overall goes to the performance and the dominant win over the Montreal Alouettes. This is the most complete game, and I don't think I'm alone, that I've seen from this team this season in the CFL. From the first snap, the Riders controlled, and they didn't let up. I loved the effort. The other thing that I noticed was this team, my goodness, were they ever playing hard? It was noticeable. They were all, like, offense, defense, everyone was putting in, like, you could tell they were not going to lose that game on Saturday. I was impressed with the effort overall. So that is my top grade. I got a couple of honorable mentions. I loved how much they used Tommy Stevens, a.k.a. Tommy Tsunami. I'm not giving up on that nickname, by the way. Stone Cold Tommy Stevens, I'm not there yet. Tommy Tsunami's better. Tommy Neild, I'm a fan. He got a touchdown. Got a couple of passes from Trevor. Joe Robustelli held off the score sheet, so he didn't get a touchdown. Didn't convert, but he's clearly one of Trevor's favorites. And, there was one there he missed in the end zone that he didn't quite get. By the way, Found Money for Joe Robustelli is his nickname. I keep mentioning that. And can I say, listen, the kicking thing is a little bit of a touchy subject right now, but I want to say that I thought Joe Couch had a couple of nice shots, and it looks like he's finding his rhythm. It looks like he's finding his game. So I'd like to keep a mention on him as well. Give him some kudos. The kickers don't get a lot of love. All right, we had a couple come in earlier. I've got this from Kirk. His grades, I promised to mention his text. He's got a Riders at an A- or a B+, maybe. This was definitely the best performance I've seen since probably 2019. Montreal didn't even make it past the 46-yard line. Glad we got to see Tommy Neild. He did not disappoint. I was still nervous every time Lawther stepped out on the field. He's probably an unpopular idea. He's throwing this out. What if, hear me out, we trade Sean Bain Jr. to Montreal for Jose Maltos? I don't know. I think that would be, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, actually. Would you do that? I don't think I'd do that. Is Lauther, I mean, are we that concerned? Listen, I love Malt. I love Jose. I mean, he's quite a character, and he's obviously doing wonderful things in Montreal. I think both his kicks, because he was the only points on the board for Montreal. I think they were close to 50, if not both of them were over 50. And if you go back and watch the highlights, go back and watch. He sticks it right down the middle every time. It's impressive. Don't get me wrong. He's impressive. I just don't know if I would make that trade. Sean Bain Jr. for Maltos. Anyway, also this text in from Mason about the record. So the only time we've had a record close to this would have been in 1970 and 2013. So in 2013, that was the year they went 8-1. If I'm not mistaken, because we looked this up recently, I think they went 8-1 in 1970 as well. And we all know what happened in 2013. So listen, this team is on to something here. We're getting quite a few texts. I'll get to them. You can also, you can give us a call on the fan line. Phone lines are open. The Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255. So we'll go to your grades next. What are you giving as a top grade? What are you giving as a failing grade? Your Green Zone grades next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. This is the Green Zone. Jamie and Locker. Jamie's not here. Locker flying solo. Jamie will be back next week. He takes the bye weeks off. Riders, big win on the weekend in Montreal. First win since 2021. They end a five-game losing streak. So much for the Montreal Flu. Now we're taking your grades. I just had my grades. We're taking yours. Green Zone fan line is open. Okay? Feel free to call. Don't be shy. 877-332-8255. We'll also take texts. Got quite a few texts. We'll get through here. This one's from Dave. Locker passing grade from the game is Tommy Stevens. And the failing grade is the Montreal Horns. So the post-game show, there was a conversation. I think Belton brought it up, if I'm not mistaken, about the Horns. Now, I know they had banned the one that they were using, but they found, I don't know if it's a workaround or there's something similar. And the Yahoos that were always blowing those horns, I think they moved them from one section away from where TSN sets up. So I think they did something to alleviate it. And listen, I didn't watch the game live, but I didn't notice the horns. And I'm not saying that to be contrary, Dave, but it wasn't as bothersome to me. I guess they're still there, but I think there's less of some. It seemed more tolerable to me. And maybe it is because they moved these guys that have them into another section. Whatever they did to talk them into that. But it is very bothersome. I'm always curious as to what fans think. Like, listen, if you're going to enjoy the game and you're taking your family or something, do you want to be in that noise for, you know, what perceivably could be half the game or more? All right, we're looking for your grades based on the Riders being 7-1, a dominant win in Montreal on Saturday. We're going to the phones. Ivan, what's your passing grade?
Hey, Locker. Long-time listener. I haven't congratulated you on your new position, so congrats, man.
I appreciate it. I very much appreciate it. I thank you for listening as well.
Yeah, here are my grades. I'll go category by category. Passing, Harris gets an A+. He's done very well. And one of the things, and I think you hinted at it on the program as well, is that on Montreal's game, he was the coolest guy in the building. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, he is
down line by line, you know, dotting every I, crossing every T, and he kept his foot on their necks and he broke them.
Yeah, I had a conversation earlier today about maybe pulling him out of the game in the fourth quarter when it looked like it was a guaranteed win, you know, like a sure thing, right? I just don't know
about that too.
Yeah, I don't know, Ivan, if that's a thing that Trevor Harris would entertain, right?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I'll give you my others quick just so you get them. Rushing, B+. Now, here's the thing. Well, that's done well. I think Anderson needs more reps for sure.
Yeah.
But I still have this nagging doubt, Locker, that Ouellette has a long time nagging injury on his right side that comes and goes because you'll see it, you know, when you see him limping. And I don't know if you notice it, but I've noticed it for 2 years now. And I think it's from all the juice that Toronto took out of him. But, you know, I'm glad they picked up Anderson, you know, now that Carey's hurt. But receiving, B+, kicking, minus, man. I don't know what the heck Lawther's drinking over there, but you better start drinking some high-test coffee.
Well, yeah, the kicking game has come up, and that's one of the things, sort of the nagging sort of things that people are bringing up. I did mention during my grades, Ivan, that I thought that it looked like he looks a little more comfortable, Joe Couch. And, yeah. and I was more concerned about the punting than I was at Lawther, if I'm being honest, because, you know, I think Lawther can get there, and there's a lot of conversation about, you know, the holding, and I think, you know, he likes that consistency, and it's not there this year. I think right. They will get there. I don't think we need to be concerned about Lawther. But Couch was sort of an unknown, right?
Yeah, and, no, that's true. And he is letting out the leg because he had a couple of boomers in that game, which is nice.
He did. He did, 100%. Yeah. And we'll have to keep an eye on the Ouellette thing because I have not noticed that. In practice, we you know, you focus quite a bit on AJ. And that is something that, you know, last year people were talking about. And you know what? They're football players, though. I think most of those guys are wandering around that, you know, in life with some sort of ailment that's lasted a long time, right?
Yeah, that's true. And you know that as far as defense and special teams, man, A's all the way around, A+. Those guys are incredible, man.
That defense and the work ethic.
Those guys up so bad.
Ivan, did you notice that? They were not stopping. They were going I was very impressed
They were hungry. They were hungry. They were precise. Their timing on the hits. And, I mean, when you don't get past a team's 46-yard line, you're in big trouble.
100%. Ivan, appreciate your call today. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, man.
All right. We had a conversation last week around the 20th anniversary of Sidney Crosby being drafted. He's still putting up amazing numbers. We asked if you would put him in the top five best players of all time. I would say about half of you had him in the top five. Up next, the Green Zone. We'll chat with Dan Kingerski. Dan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins and is the president of the National Hockey Now. He's up next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.